This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
I'm Andrew Johnstone, and you're listening to The Last Breath, a podcast about death and dying, brought to you by Hospice Waikato and Free FM, the Waikato's community access media organisation. In 2019, the New Zealand Parliament passed the End of Life Choice Act into law, and on November the 7th, 2021, New Zealand became one of only 11 countries in the world that allows assisted dying. As of the 31st of March, 2025, 1,210 people have chosen an assisted death. Verna was one of them. In this insightful and penetrating interview, her granddaughter Sophie recalls the experience.
Hi, my name is Sophie. I am 29 years old, and I've come here today to talk about my grandmother's journey with assisted dying.
Sophie, before we get started, let's learn something about you.
Sure.
What's your story?
I was born in Auckland. We lived there until I was 14, and me, my mother, and my grandmother, we all moved down to Hamilton. We lived in a house that had a granny flat underneath, so Nana lived with us for all of my teenage years and most of my younger years. I went to school, I did a bit of study at Wintec, and then I decided I wanted to move back up to Auckland, be closer to my dad and my two half-brothers. And then with everything with life going on, I have decided now it's time for me to move back to Hamilton, be closer to mum with everything that's happened. Just see where life takes me at this stage.
So you spent a lot of your early years living with your grandmother?
Yes, lots.
What was her name?
Verna.
Verna.
Yeah.
And you were close?
Very close.
Tell us about her. What was her personality like? Her character?
She was definitely a character. Other people probably would have described her as a little bit crabby. She was a little bit of a crabby lady.
What do you mean by crabby?
She was a little bit grumbly. She was sort of always a little bit grumbly about things.
What kind of things would annoy her?
Traffic, waiting for things. I don't really know how to describe it other than she was just always a little bit grumbly. She sounded a little bit...
What would she say about the traffic?
Oh, you blimmin' people, you know. What are you all doing out at the middle of the day? You should be at work or go home. I'm just trying to go to the park or I'm trying to get my groceries. But under all of that, she was just... I can't imagine what my life would have been like had I not grown up with her. I spent most of my school holidays with her. She would sit down and we would build cardboard Barbie houses, and she would build cardboard Barbie furniture, and we would play dolls and doctors, and we would make ice cream sundaes, and we'd be baking, and she'd cut open the chocolate sauce bottle and scoop out every last drop of chocolate for me. We just did lots of things that were very one-on-one and very special to me, and I really felt like I had somebody there doing all that with me. I didn't have a sibling growing up, it was definitely very special to me that she did a lot of things with me, and she took the time and the effort and put in the love to have fun with me and let me have fun as a kid and take me to do things. And I think that's really special in my life, that relationship that I had with her.
She was attentive.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she was more of a friend than a grandmother.
She was definitely a bit of both. She was my grandma at the end of the day. But especially when I was little, she... really wanted to get involved in the things that I wanted to do. I was in love with Barbies. I always wanted to play Barbie, so that's what we'd do. Or I'd watch a program on TV and see them doing something crafty, and that's what I'd want to do. And so she'd help make that happen, and yeah, just very special and
encouraging.
Encouraging.
What was the best thing about her? Was she loving and demonstrative?
She was, and she was also quite funny. She had quite a bit of a more morbid sense of humour. But yeah, just things that she'd do, or maybe how she would say things, especially when she was sounding quite grumpy, would be quite funny, seeing a, you know, a old lady being quite grumpy over silly things.
She didn't mind if you laughed at that?
No, she didn't. She was just who she was. She was unapologetically who she was. She didn't care what people thought.
And she was self-effacing with it?
Yep. She is who she is, and you either take it or you leave it. I vividly remember her struggling, trying to make a sturdy Barbie doll house out of cardboard and trying to make furniture that I could sit my Barbies on, and they'd fall apart as soon as I put the Barbie on. I think really made me feel special and seen, and like she actually put in that effort, you know, and she just, that little bit of extra thinking. And she was quite good at sort of making it special, or making it a bit of an event.
A grandparent's love is slightly different to a parent's love, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So when you're a teenager, of course, things are changing. You're changing.
Yeah.
The world you're living in is changing. So you're at high school, you have a bad day. Was she there for you?
She was. Yep. We never really had the type of relationship when I was older that I could go and say, oh, hey, this is going on. You know, this person was horrible today, or I did this that wasn't very nice, or that sort of thing. But I could just go down and sit there and be with her. Or she loved to watch Coronation Street, so we could watch that together, or help with dinner, or she was always happy for us to just come down and sit at her place with her, or go walking with her with the dogs.
So she was companionable?
Yes, she was less so. It was less so with words. She wasn't a very chatty lady, but she definitely showed it with her actions and things like that.
So being with her was comforting?
Yep. She used to make... So she would do a lot of our dinners, and she would make special things that we'd like. So we'd come home for dinner, and she'd be making her casserole was my favourite thing that she used to make, and so she'd be making her casserole. And she'd make it with all the things that I'd like. Or the next night she'd make Mum's favourite dish, or just little things like that that were really... It makes you feel considered and loved and appreciated, and yeah.
And when you moved back to Auckland, did you stay in touch?
So I moved to Auckland not long after she passed.
So you were still here in Hamilton?
I was, yeah. So that was quite hard, having moved away after that.
So... when did you get the news that she was ill?
So we got the news in 2024, January of 2024.
And how did you feel when you heard?
I think I felt quite numb at the beginning stages. I remember Mum... So at the time, Nana had moved out of her little granny flat underneath Mum's house, and she was living in her own house in the St. Kilda's Village in Cambridge. So I was living underneath in the granny flat underneath Mum's house, and she asked me to come upstairs one day, so I did. And she told me that they had been to the specialist, her and Nana, and the specialist had said that she had stage 4 lung cancer and that it was advanced and it was not looking very good. And I just remember feeling very numb. It was a big shock. We didn't really have, or me, I didn't really have any inkling that Nana was sick. She'd always had a few problems with her lungs, so she was a smoker her whole life, as well as being asthmatic. So she did struggle with her chest a bit. But there were really no big or major symptoms or indicators that something was quite as wrong as it was. So yeah, it was quite a big shock to everybody. And then just figuring out what to do from there, what she wanted to do.
Did you start grieving at that stage? Were you tearful or just numb?
I think I was numb. I think I did feel a little bit sad, but at that stage it was more for Mum and not for myself yet. I'm just trying to think back to when Mum told me. I think she was very, quite calm and to the point. But she's my mum, so I can tell that.
You can read between the lines.
Yes, I knew how she was feeling underneath, and I knew that it would have been a lot for her to carry. I think at that stage I was just feeling more for Mum and even for Nana too, because I know that she would have been not even worried about herself, but worried about us and everybody else, how we would be feeling at that stage.
So your mum's told you the news. When is how many days until you see your Nana again?
I believe it was either the next day. So it was on Thursday that they had their appointment, and then they came and told me that she'd been diagnosed. I don't think it was the Friday. I think it was that weekend. So 2-3 days after. And I think we went to go and see her, and we had lunch with her. And
how were you feeling, knowing that you were going to see her? Did you? It's difficult, isn't it?
It's very difficult. It's a really strange time because it feels very surreal and also very real at the same time. I think I just had a lot of questions running through my head. You know, where do we go from here? How was it going to affect Nana? You know, what are the things that we can do? Just lots of questions about being as prepared as possible and trying to get as much information.
And how was she?
She seemed okay within herself, but she was a little bit down feeling, I think. I think it was a little bit surreal to her too. It takes a little while, something like that. It sort of takes a little while to process. And even though you know what it means, it still takes a while to sort of understand what that means for you personally in your own situation.
So as a family, you and your mum and Verna, you're working in your own ways to come to terms with what's ahead.
Yeah. I think we were all very much focused on each other rather than on ourselves, which I think really helped. We were sort of all there for each other, looking out for each other.
The three of you sound like you're a very tight unit.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time together. And Nana having lived with us for so many years, she's been a really good help to mum, and mum's been a really big help to her. It's special. It's a special kind of relationship to have had so much interaction with a grandparent and your parent. And even for mum and Anna, who having so much contact with her mother is really cool, I think. And especially now that Nana's not here anymore, I think it's been really special to mum to have had, you know, that quality time, and the fact that me and Nana had that quality time. And
so the next few weeks, what unfolds?
There wasn't much of a debate about it, but Nana had pretty much decided within herself that she didn't want any treatment. She just wanted to be as comfortable as, and as happy as she could for as long as she had left. So her birthday is the 14th of February, which was only a couple of weeks after she was diagnosed. So we had a birthday party for her 77th. Her neighbour, who lived just across from her at the village, came over with some wine and some food and some presents. We had some family come over, and we did some cake, and we got Indian. And we just had a big celebration. I don't think a lot of people knew at that time. Nana didn't want people to worry. She didn't want people to feel sorry for her or feel bad for her or be grieving her yet. She just wanted people to come and have a good time, celebrate her birthday, which was really nice. She had a good time. Yeah, everyone there had a really good time. And then not long after that, Mum asked Nana, would you like to come and live with us again instead of being over in Cambridge? And Nana said yes. So we got Nana, picked her up and brought her over to Mum's house with her little dog, got her all sorted up, settled into the spare room. And yeah, we were just spending our time with her and...
What was the dog's name?
Louis.
And how old was he?
Oh, so he was a rescue when he got him, so he was living on the streets before we got him. But we think he was between maybe 8 and 10. He was a Shih Tzu, but he was also crossed with another type of breed. He had very little legs, so he was quite a wide and long dog with very little legs, and he also only had one eye, so he looked quite funny, but he was a real personality, and Anna loved him.
And he was close to Verna?
Yep. She loved dogs, and he was her little friend. She'd walk him every day, and he'd sleep on the bed with her. We used to joke that he would eat better than she would, because she'd buy him steak, chicken, all sorts of food, and cook it up for him.
She's back at home and she's living with you in the spare room. Is she able, is she still up and around, or is she?
She is. She was still ambulatory up until the end. She was moving around.
Sorry, I don't know what that word is.
Oh, sorry. I believe that it's still up and moving around sort of thing. So she was able to, we took the dog for a walk, but she was definitely she felt a lot more pressure on her chest. Each breath was a little bit more of a struggle. And I think she was starting to feel quite tired. Considering the situation, she was doing well up until the end. I think the day before that she passed, I believe, I went with her with the dog, and we took him for a walk around the block. And she did really well. It's quite a big block walk, so she managed to do that, and she did that well.
So she, yeah. I guess, at this stage, what's ahead of her is this slow decline until she's bedridden and she needs intensive pain relief and care in a hospice bed.
That was her biggest fear, was being stuck, not being able to breathe, struggling to breathe, and just being in pain and not being able to do anything about it. I think also because of Mum's connection to hospice and the fact that she has so much knowledge and experience around a sister dying, I think that was what helped open up that conversation with Nana a little bit more.
So, sorry, before we go there, at this stage, is she depressed or is she feeling okay? She was a bit depressed to start with, wasn't she? A bit down.
I don't think she was fully there yet, but I think she was definitely declining.
And emotionally and mentally?
Yeah. I think she was definitely quite scared and just worried. She was scared about the dog, what was going to happen to him, who was going to look after him as well as she did, because she really spoiled him. How are me and Mum going to cope? She was just sort of worrying about everything as you do at that stage. It's a really tough time for people.
So who initiated the conversation about assisted dying? Did Verna bring it up herself?
So I believe that they had been to a specialist appointment, and the specialist had given a pamphlet, I believe. I believe they're not allowed to mention it or say, hey, this is an option or this. But I believe they can give you a pamphlet which has the information for you to decide yourself whether you want to look into it. And so when they got home, Mum said to Nana, what do you think about this? Have a read. See if that's something you would be interested in. And she was. She decided that she didn't want to have any treatment. And she just wanted to live her life until as long as she could.
How did you feel when she made that choice?
It was a big shock.
Because it's not a death somewhere in the future. It's somewhere between 6 months and a year's time. It's now I'm going to draw a line and this is the day I'm going to die.
I think that was the hardest part for me. Not even the fact that she chose assisted dying. Nana has always been quite different in her thinking. I've always remembered her, as long as I can remember her saying, oh gosh, if I get to 80, that's too long for me. Like, I've lived my life, I've done everything. I really don't want to just be struggling. She used to joke, put me in a rubbish sack and just roll me down the hill. I'm fine. Like, don't even worry. So as much of a shock and a surprise it was that it happened in general, it wasn't such a shock that she chose that. My personal belief is that, we are humane to animals. I don't see how it's different for people. I really understand that people, really intense feelings come up when it's, one of your people, and especially when it comes across as like a choice of a sister dying. You either choose or you don't. And I think that really upsets people because it makes people feel like, well, you could have lived, or maybe it could have been prevented, or we could have done this, but instead it's a choice rather than it just happening. And I think the fact that it's not talked about so much and the fact that it's so new in New Zealand, a lot of people don't understand. You know, it's not like I could just go in and decide, I've had enough, I want to do the same. There's very specific circumstances. There's checklists, you know, you have to check off. You have to make sure that you're of sound mind, make sure that it is genuinely the decision you want to make, make sure that no one's pressuring you. There's a whole protocol and procedure around it. And I think maybe the lack of education and knowledge and understanding from a lot of people is what makes it so hard for them to comprehend, or the very intense feelings people get around death or sickness, or that feeling of losing somebody, makes it really hard for people to stop and think, well, you know, I really love this person, and if I could choose, I would keep them here, happy and healthy, but they're not happy and healthy, you know, so do I want to help them, you know, be comfortable and happy for as long as I can, or, you know, it's
let them go.
Yeah. It's very conflicting for people with your emotions in that sort of situation.
So how many people did she tell? You and your mum?
So me and mum, it was not very many people knew. So she did try and tell another family member who she was very close with, who was so upset and devastated at not only the fact that she was dying, but the fact that she chose a sister dying. And they were incredibly upset and quite distraught and quite worked up that she had chosen to have a sister dying. And so they said, I don't agree with this, and, you know, I don't want this to happen. And so that was quite tough on her, I think.
Now, this is something, before we started recording, this is something we talked about briefly, and my limited experience of talking to people about a sister dying, there's this tendency that they tell only the people they absolutely trust.
Yeah.
Because I'm about to make this choice and I don't want to have to deal with people who disagree with me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to deal with their disapproval or their anger.
Yeah.
Or their emotions.
Mm.
Which is kind of sad.
It's hard because it's very valid to feel that drop into the pit of your stomach when you hear that somebody you love, you know, somebody you want to stay on this earth with you, has decided to choose assisted dying. And I think people struggle to navigate between their own personal feelings and the feelings of the person that is dying. And it's really normal to not want it to happen and to feel like, you know, I want to do anything I can to stop this or make it better or fix it or whatever I can do. But in that situation, you know, once you get to that point and someone's already considering that, it's for a reason. It's because it's already too late. And that's sort of at that point where everything else really just needs to go out the window. It doesn't matter. You know, it's really just about the person and what they want and what will help them.
So once Vern has made this decision,
yep,
how does she, is she more comfortable?
Yes. She found it incredibly hard to make the not make the decision, but pick the actual day. So she said to Mum one day, she said, how do I pick a day? How do I choose a day and say that's the day that I'm going to go? And Mum said, well, you just need to think about how miserable you are and how miserable you think you'll be and when you think you'll be ready. And so because Nana was really worried about getting to the point where she deteriorated so quickly and she couldn't breathe, I think picking a day and having that in her mind was a big relief for her.
And what day did she pick?
She picked the 4th of March.
For any particular reason?
Sorry, 7th of March. So it would have been at the end of February. She was really noticing her struggling and breathing. And that would have been when her and Mum had the conversation about picking a day. And Mum said, well, you need to think about how miserable you're really feeling now, because it's likely not going to get better. And then I decided, well, I've nearly had enough now. Like, I'm ready. And so I think it takes, you've got to have at least 7 days before your day. So that's where the 7th came from.
So you've got 7 days to think about it, reflect.
Yeah, and just be.
This is what I want. The other checks and balances, she's obviously, all the boxes have been ticked.
Yeah.
And the doctors have agreed.
Yep. But so, she still got up until on that day to decide, even if on that day she decided, I don't want to do this anymore, that's absolutely fine.
This is very scary, this part, because I've run this through my own mind a lot.
Yeah.
If I get cancer, and this is what I'm going to have, I've sat beside my father, watched him die a slow, lingering death, and I'm thinking, I would choose a sister dying. That's what I'm thinking on a good day.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, how do you make that choice? And when the day comes, would I be really scared? Would I be worried?
Yeah.
Is it going to be painful? How do I let go?
Yeah.
Was she thinking about those things? Were you thinking about those things?
I was. I think Nana was quietly. She was always very tough, so she wouldn't have liked to have said, I'm scared, or, you know, I'm worried that I am not going to be able to let go. But I think for her within herself, she felt like it was her time. And, you know, we'd spent our time with her, we'd said our things that we needed to say, she'd said what she needed to say. And apart from, you know, worrying that me and Mum will be okay, her other greatest fear was the dog going to be okay?
And what decision did she make there?
So the decision that she made was, he was getting old and he was starting to have stomach issues and things like that. So we decided that it was a good idea for him to also go and be with Nana. So we had booked in for the vet to come out on the same day, a few hours after Nana. So I think once she realised that the dog was going to be okay, you know, he was going to be with her soon, and that, you know, me and Mum we'd done as much as we could to make sure we were going to be okay. I think that did help quite a lot.
Did Verna believe in an afterlife?
She never really spoke about it in the way that she did. Like, she was not a religious person. She never really spoken about an afterlife or that sort of thing. But I do believe that deep down she at least hoped that, you know, there was somewhere where she could go and be with, you know, all her people before that have already passed. And, you know, her sister passed a few years ago. I think I think that that was quite a comforting thought, that she could go and see her sister again and things like that. So,
and be with her dogs.
And be with her dogs. That was a big one. Yep.
So the day rolls around.
Yes.
March 7th.
Yes.
The day before. How was she?
Everything felt It almost felt like there was no air, like all the air had sort of been sucked out. It was almost like time was moving quite slow. I think it felt quite surreal right up until the day before. And then it was like, oh, tomorrow is the day. And we had a nice dinner. We all had some drinks. Nana had her rum and coke. And she even had a cigarette out on the deck because that's what she wanted. So we said, go for it. And we had some laughs and we played music. And we all just chatted until it was time for bed. I don't know how much anybody actually slept that night. I think we were all just kind of lying there. And then, yeah, it was suddenly the day, or the day of. We went upstairs and all had breakfast. And I took the dog for a walk, which was, I think that was when it really kind of hit me. I was like, I'm taking Nana's not coming on this walk with me. I'm taking him by myself, and this is his last walk. When I get back to the house, we're pretty much ready. And yeah, we sat there and had some coffee and waited for the doctor to turn up. It was a very surreal kind of feeling. Time. I don't even know that there was time at all that day. Like, it just was strange, very strange. It didn't feel like anything was moving, anything was, yeah.
What time did the doctor turn up?
So he turned up at about 10 o'clock.
Early in the day.
Yes. So I think Nana got to pick a time as well. And so the doctor turned up at 10 o'clock. And we sat and we had a little bit of a chat. And then he said to Nana, would you like to decide where you would like to be, where you feel most comfortable? It can be anywhere. You can be on the chair, you can be on the couch, you can be in bed, wherever you feel most comfortable. And she decided she wanted to be in bed. So she hopped into bed with her little dog. And so the doctor stepped into the room with her privately and had a conversation with her, made sure that she was still of sound mind, made sure that she was still sure of her decision. She still wanted to do this. She didn't feel pressured. And just make sure that there weren't any other questions that she had. And then once that was finished, we got to go in and have our little moment with her, which was really nice. And then after that, it was pretty much time. So the doctor explained it to all of us, and he said, there's three injections. The first one is a sedative, so it just makes you feel real sleepy and calm. The second one, I believe the second one was or something like a muscle relaxant. And then the third one was the one that stops your heart. So he said, you can have the first injection and still tell me I've changed my mind. You can have the second injection and still tell me I've changed my mind. But the third injection, once that goes in, that is when it's final. So you have up until the third, which I will ask you again one more time, are you sure, to change your mind. So it's not like you're locked in there right up until the very end. And yeah, so he said, are you sure that this is what you want and you're all ready? And she said, yes. And so he put the first injection in.
And the arm?
And yep, in the arm.
Into the vein?
Yep, into the vein. And then I can't remember how long, but they waited maybe 5 minutes, I think, in between. And then he put the second injection in.
Had you spoken to her at this stage? Did you say goodbye?
Or? Yes, yeah. So we had our little, after the doctor had spoken to her, we all went in and had our little moment. Just our very final one last goodbye. I had written her a nice card on her birthday with little things that I'd remembered of our time together so that she knew that I remembered and she could look at that and, you know. So yeah, everyone got to have their little bit of moment with her. And then he said, okay, so this is the third injection now. Just let me know if you've changed your mind. And she was, no, I'm sure I want this. And so he put the third injection in. And again, I'm not sure of the time on that day. I had no sense of time. But after a little while, she started getting quite sleepy. And she sort of just very slowly closed her eyes until she was asleep from the sedative and the muscle relaxer. And then very slowly, the heart will just stop. I think that was probably the hardest part. Watching her breathing and watching her breathing change and get very shallow and almost forced, like it was clearly the wasn't her, it was her body doing the breathing. And it's just not something you don't see, you know, you don't see that really anywhere. Or you might see a bit of it in TV, but most people generally don't see a lot of death or dying or anything like that. And it was really strange because at the time that I noticed her very last breath and then another one didn't happen, the dog, he like sat up and he shuddered. And it was the strangest thing, like he just knew that she was gone. And I think we sat in there with her for maybe about 20 minutes or so. And I think everybody else went out to call the funeral director.
How long did the doctor stay for?
So he stayed, I think he waited until, I think he had to wait until she had passed. They've got to pronounce time of death. And then once he's done that and documented that, then he can go. And so we contacted the funeral directors and I sat in there with Nana and the dog for a little bit. And then, yeah, we just waited for the funeral director who came and got Nana. And we waited for the vet to come for the dog, which was quite awful too. But it was also nice to know that he was going to be with Nana. He was obsessed looking for her. Once the funeral director had come and taken her, he kept running back in the room trying to look for her. He was running all around the house trying to look where she'd gone to. And he was quite sort of panicked and upset. He didn't know what was going on.
Was she going to be cremated or buried?
Cremated.
So were they cremated together?
They weren't cremated together, but we will spread them together. So the vet came and put down the dog and took him away to be cremated. It's a very different experience. Doesn't sound quite right, but I would do it again. I've been of this belief most of my life, but especially now, I feel like if someone has the opportunity to have a choice between a sister dying and not, I would pick a sister dying. It's kind, it's probably not a great saying, but it's the best of a bad situation. Like, it gives the dying person time to, you know, get their affairs in order. They can say what they need to say. They can sort what they need to sort. They can allow themselves to feel more ready. Same with the family. It gives the family chance to say goodbye, sort anything that they need to sort out. It's such a blessing being able to have that opportunity to say goodbye and have it be in such a way that she didn't suffer. She wasn't in uncontrollable pain. She was still in her right mind. Like, she was still the Nana that I knew. I think it's a really great thing that it's something that we're offered now in New Zealand. And, you know, if anybody in my family or anybody that I know or love decides that that's what they want to do, then that's great.
The experience, you know, part of the reason we're doing this podcast series is because we don't talk about death.
Yeah.
I just interviewed a retired GP the other day who was saying we weren't taught about death at medical school.
Yeah.
He said we never had that discussion. He said suddenly I'm out practicing and I'm encountering death on a regular basis. And he said I had to learn to deal with that and it was hard.
Yeah.
And he said if only we'd been talking about it, he said, it would have been so much easier.
Definitely.
So you've just spoken about, you're up and close personal with death, and this is your first experience of being right there.
Yeah.
How has it affected you as a person? Has it made you a better person? Has it elevated your experience of life?
I think so. I think it's a very special... It's a special thing to be able to be with someone in that moment that they're dying and, you know, be able to be there for them. I think it's helped me a little bit more to understand grief a little bit better. Like I've lost people, but generally not as close as my nana, and especially so up close and personal. I think it was an awful thing that happened, but I also think it's very important for people to, like you said, be able to talk about death, dying, all of those sorts of things. Like it's just part of life, and there can be things that we don't want to happen, you know, and we still kind of have to deal with them and talk about them because that's what makes it easier. Me and Mum have had lots of conversations about how people's communication changes after someone has died, like other people, you know, and people don't know how to talk about death or how to talk to somebody who has lost somebody, or it's a very uncomfortable subject and people think, you know, I don't want to bring it up because I don't want to upset them, or I don't want to make somebody uncomfortable, or, you know, but that sort of stuff is really important.
It's a very, very important, very important point. Yeah. I've sat with two dying people for this series. I've talked with two people on their deathbeds, and it's very hard. It's very hard to go in and be straightforward and say, well, let's talk about death. Yeah. Are you frightened? Do you have regrets? How do you feel? I feel like I'm intruding. I'm intruding on somebody's most private place.
Yeah.
But the thing I've learned is that you walk in and you go, as I did the other day, last week's episode with Mel Brooks, and I said, well, I thought, okay, you can't beat around the bush. Just walk in and go, Mel, so you're dying. How much time do you have left?
Yeah.
And it's surprising how people really appreciate that.
They do.
They know what's going on. They don't need you to pussyfoot around. No. They don't need you to pretend that everything's going to be okay.
Definitely.
And it's an important lesson for me, and I think it's an important lesson for everybody.
It is, definitely, yeah.
Do you miss Verna?
I do. I actually had... So Mum got this ring made for me for my birthday and Christmas just been, and we have a small portion of Nana's ashes in the little heart, which I know that Nana would hate. She would hate that. She, you know, just get rid of me, don't hold on. But then I had to say to myself, well, actually, sorry, Nana, it's not for you, it's for me. But yes, I do miss her. I think it helps me and Mum talk about her a lot, and we make a conscious effort to do that. People stop talking about people that have passed generally after a little while. They stop mentioning it, or they try not to mention it. And I think for the people who are still grieving, that's important to keep talking about them. It makes it feel like they're not just gone, you know, like they're still what they left behind.
That their life mattered?
That their life mattered, that they're not forgotten. You know, just because they're not still here on Earth doesn't mean they don't exist, or that they weren't special or a big part of your life, or, you know, and I think that that's really important to be able to talk about that, you know, on days where Mum's missing her, or I'm missing her, or I think of something, you know, and we'll tell each other. We have quite a funny-ish little story from the day that she passed. So she said to us in the morning, she said, the first thing she said was, don't leave me here all day. Like, don't you leave me here all day. You better get on it and get it sorted. And then she said, and don't sit around boobing. Don't be sitting around boobing. Which means sitting there, you know, crying and howling, and which we all had a bit of a chuckle at because it's so Nana. Don't be boobing. Don't be sitting there boobing. And so we say that to each other sometimes. Stop boobing. And yeah, just little things like that really help.
Do you have any children?
No.
Are you ever thinking of having children?
Yep, at some stage.
Will you tell them about Verna?
Yep. There was one thing that I thought about after she'd passed was the fact that she won't be here for that. I mean, I guess that is where my own stories and my own memories and stuff like that, you know, that's just what you've got to do, is you share their legacy or what they left behind. I see a lot of her and Mum all the time, and I think, you know, even though my kids aren't going to have Nana, they're going to have Mum. And I think Mum's going to be the same with my future kids as how Nana was with me. You know, very involved with them, very loving. Mum is a really good cook and a baker. Yeah, it is quite sad that Nana, you know, won't be there, but I'll definitely tell them about her. And
when you say to them, don't sit around all day boobing, you can carry on her memory.
Yeah. I think I smile every time I think of that. And sometimes when I'm having like a bad day or something, I will tell myself, I'll be like, stop boobing, you know, and have a bit of a chuckle, and I can hear Nana in my head, stop boobing. Yeah, it's been a really hard journey, but it's also, it makes you really grateful for the people in your life.
And it was the right thing to do?
Definitely.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.